And hello.
Hello.
Sorry, we're just doing a quick podcast. Shaky Dragon, yeah.
Hi there everyone, it's David here, and don't be alarmed. I know normally this music and my voice mean something wrong has happened, but in this instance, everything is okay. It's just that we had a few odds and ends left over from Emerald City and from Fan Expo, and none of them were long enough to be their own show, and so we thought we'd kind of squeeze them together into one episode, and then maybe we should have a little bit of an introduction just to kind of let you know what's happening. So up first is Shannon Wheeler. Shannon was kind enough to talk to us at the con. Now, he didn't have time to come back to our hotel room and do an actual sit-down with us. So what we did instead was we met up at the bar at the Sheraton, which is basically right across the street from the convention center for Emerald City. And so it was a convenient place to meet. Unfortunately, it was probably the worst environment we've ever recorded in. So it's going to be kind of noisy. I did my best to get out most of the noise, but, to turn it down a little bit, but it's very difficult. So anyway, here's Shannon and us talking at the Sheraton Bar.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Sneaky Dragon in a bar.
In a bar.
We have never done this in a bar before,
yeah.
Probably for this reason.
Sure.
I'm Ian Boothby.
I'm David Dedrick.
And our guest today, go ahead if you wanted to say words.
I'm Shannon Wheeler.
Yeah, all podcast rules do not apply right now because we're in a bar, anything
a bar.
Goes. It's Cuckoo
Everybody
Bananas.
Everybody knows your name.
There you go, exactly.
Wow.
You may know Shannon Wheeler best for Too Much Coffee Man. You may know him for Too Much Coffee Man, the opera. You might know him from his New Yorker cartoons. But you should know him now for a book that he's done illustrations for. And is written by Mark Russell. It's God is Disappointed in You.
Yes.
And that's the newest thing. There, all the plugs are out of the way.
It's perfect.
Now Shannon, we are in Seattle.
Yes.
All right. We're just establishing. We're laying down.
We're still at Emerald City.
And all day long, you have been selling your books.
Yeah, it's just amazing. The best we've done selling books in a long time.
Yeah, it was crazy. Although they were flying, because your latest book is based on another popular book.
The Bible, the most popular book in history. So,
yeah.
I'm right. Something
to eat? No, just the beer is perfect. Yes, thank you. That's very authentic.
Yeah, it is.
We're actually
It was worth paying her for that. It's worth hiring an actress just for that, just to give her that authenticity.
Yeah, I got to get her now sign a release.
Yeah,
though. That's
the problem.
Drag.
Yeah.
Okay, so
otherwise
the Bible.
Her voice will have to be blurred.
I can sign that for you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Now, what is there to be said about the Bible that has not already been said? Why this new version?
On my end, one reason I wanted to work on the book is that Mark knew the Bible, and I tried to read the Bible several times and failed each time.
It's a hard one. Yeah.
Yeah, I could read like the children's Bible, which when I was a kid I read, but I'd sit down and try to read King James and get stuck halfway through Genesis.
I'm shaking my head because King James is a really hard nut to crack, because not only are you reading a really dense work. I almost said a fiction, a dense work, but you are reading it in an old language that it's practically gone. It's like trying to read Shakespeare now. It's really
difficult. Shakespeare's easier, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was my motivation, was here's a way for me to learn about the Bible.
Sure.
And for Mark, it was a way for him to teach people about the Bible.
Okay.
And he said that actually when he started the project, he thought he knew the Bible well, and that as he started to revisit each book, he realized how little of it that he knew. He knew it. Small portion, because that's what had been fed to him when he was growing up.
Okay.
And so that's why it turned from a 2-month gag project of this will be fun and easy and we'll bang this thing out to a 3-year, this is for real and we should do a really good job on this.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we did, though. Please. I mean,
let me just also, in case people are going like, it's it is a serious take. It's a well-researched take.
Yeah, it is.
But it's also a very funny book.
Yeah,
I hope so.
You know what? As someone who's just been reading it, yes. I'm going to throw a yes at your way.
And as someone who, I have not read the whole book yet, but I first encountered it at Powell's in Portland. I just picked it up because, of course, I see a book with God. It's disappointed in you in the title. I'm going to grab it. Because I want to know why he's so disappointed in it. What have I done?
Right.
But, and I was really impressed by how it's an abridged Bible. It's obviously abridged.
Right.
And it kind of recounts stories of the Bible in a modern, in contemporary language that's understandable. But it's really accurate to the spirit of it as well. It's not a snarky retelling of it. It's not making fun of it. It's a truthful, you know, open-spirited retelling of the Bible.
And that, when we started, that was a big thing, is to not be mean-spirited.
Yeah.
And we talked about almost every aspect of it incessantly. I mean, we talked about it a lot and making it. And we worried that because it wasn't mean enough, that we would lose our hipster audience.
Okay.
That if we had gone further over the edge and really tried to really emphasize the inaccuracies or the contradictions or...
Thank you very much.
Oh, and our drinks are here. I love it.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Thank you. I assume this
thank
is mine.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
We've just been presented a bowl of salty random objects,
yes,
which looks delicious.
You correctly guessed that would come. What a prediction.
I love it. And unsolicited, too.
hipsters, you were worried about those.
Yeah, we were worried. Like, if we'd said, oh, this is the Satanic Bible, or the something Bible, like the Unholy Bible played as a name.
Yeah.
I mean, we played with a lot of names, too. But we weren't trying to do that. But we thought that if we had done that, that would have a market. We knew that market. And so we worried we'd lost them because we weren't mean in this. We were definitely trying not to be mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Though your cartoons are very irreverent in there.
Irreverency is one thing, yeah.
That is a very different thing than being mean, absolutely.
But that's different. I mean, there's a Facebook group on Facebook called, Unrighteous Abbey, or no, Unvirtuous Abbey is what it's called.
Okay.
And it's run by an Anglican minister in the Maritimes, and it is full of irreverence. It's not mean-spirited, but it's just, you know, full of fun things like, you know, having Christ dressed up like a stormtrooper on Star Wars Day and things like that. You know, just things like that that are fun and bring people to it in a different way and present it in a new way. And, you know, there are other versions of the Bible that retell it in modern. There's the Word, and then there was the Good News Bible and things like that.
The Ebonics Bible is one that I picked up.
Okay, that's one I have not seen.
Cain Weighs Sable.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
I got the Joe Kubert one, the big, very well drawn.
Sure, well...
Yeah. One thing like, you know, I came to like your work through Too Much Coffee Man, and what I really liked about it was it started off just straight funny. That's a great concept, moving on. But then it got very philosophical, and it was like, how much depth can you get out of these damn characters?
Yeah.
But you're able to do it, you know?
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't know how much depth I'd get out of it. I thought every comic, this is my last. I've got nothing more. And then I'd sit there and stress out, and, oh, there's another comic.
But it was
one.
Usually about someone stressing out, going, what am I going to do with my life? Like, embracing, you know, there was a lot of philosophy in your work then. Do you still do go to the that well?
Yeah, in the next, the Dark Horse Presents, I'm doing a long Too Much Coffee Man story. And the first bit's silly, and the second bit's sort of silly. But the third bit is he moves in with a woman. His house gets so he moves in with this woman, and she acts like they've been married for 10 years. And at first, he's resistant to this, and he's fighting, and he's like, no, he's just renting a room. But then it takes about an hour just to brainwash him, and so he just finally decides it's easier to be in a relationship than to fight and not be in the relationship. So he's just, okay, we're married, you know, and so he just goes in. And that's very much about identity and thought and who we are and how we decide things. So I'm starting that one. I'm really excited about.
Oh, good. Glad to hear that. Now, we're going to get back to the Bible thing, because I know you want to probably talk more about that.
Sure, yeah.
But, like, where has Too Much Coffee Man then gone since you began? Because I know there was an opera.
Right, right.
And how'd things go with that?
They were great. That was a really weird... when I was doing it, at some point I had to start pushing really hard to do it. I had to figure out and solve all these problems. and I'd never done theater before, so I had a learning curve that was intense.
Yeah.
And I had to act like I knew what I was doing in order to get people to follow me.
Now, you were directing this as well? It wasn't just your source material?
No. I mean, I was involved. I guess technically I was a producer, but I don't know. I didn't know even what a producer was. No, I wasn't. It was Randy Rollison was the producer, so I don't know what I was doing.
That's a producer, then. If you don't know what you're doing on any production, that's what it is.
Yeah,
absolutely. I've been a producer on many a thing, yeah. Something, are you a showrunner? I don't know, a producer, that's what it is. Now, were you a fan of opera before then? Or just,
no.
How did that end up happening?
That was the composer, Daniel Crafts. I say that he bugged me for a few years. He thinks that I bugged him. But he's a friend of the family, so we would have Thanksgivings together and such. But he's written about 12 operas. This was, well, now probably more, like 18. But this was his 13th opera. And he just, from my account, said, hey, I want to do this opera. And I said, no, that's a terrible idea. And it was about 2 years later, I had a dream where Too Much Coffee Man was singing. And I woke up and I thought, this would be great because of what's opera doc type, but yeah. With Too Much Coffee Man.
Okay.
I thought, who could I get to write a Too Much Coffee Man opera? And then it was about a day before I realized, wait, I know a guy who writes opera and he's wanted to do one. Like, I'm an idiot, you know. So I emailed him and we started. And he said, yeah, send a libretto. And then I had to look up what a libretto was. And then, you know, rhyming couplets, he goes, it's fine, so I had to look that up too. And I just started writing. And he sent me back MIDI files to begin with, and just, he understood the jokes, understood how to give it a rhythm and pauses to make the humor work, so that I would put a word at the end that changes the meaning, and he would put a pause before that word so that it creates this tension. It just, he got it, he understood. It was great.
That's great.
It was amazing. I was very, very lucky. What was weird is at the end when we were going to do the opera and it's sold out and the room is filled with people and I'm sitting in the back and this guy comes out dressed as Too Much Coffee Man, it hit me what I had done was really weird.
Yeah.
Like, I was so into it that I just never... And I thought... What have I done? This is the weirdest thing. All, like 200 plus people sitting, I'm watching them watch this thing. And I thought this could be the worst moment of my life. This could go so south. And he starts singing and everybody in the audience didn't know what to expect either. So there was this tension that was palpable.
Yeah.
And It took about a minute, or it took actually the first bit, and then somebody laughed, and it broke, and it created the rhythm. I was like, oh, it's so, because people didn't know, is this serious? Is this humor?
It was a producer's moment. Everyone's tense with Springtime for Hitler's going until one person starts laughing, and now it's the biggest hit.
Yeah. It was exactly like that. Yeah. And then everybody started laughing. It was like, just big sigh of relief. It was very, very weird, though.
Yeah, that feeling never goes away when you do any live comedy. It's like that first laugh. You listen for it. Mm-hmm. What type of laugh is it? How fast does it spread? And then, okay, now we can
sit back
and take your first big breath.
It does help.
I was so green, I didn't even know that was...
Most of the things you've done, there hasn't been, like, ground already broken. Just in terms of size of comics, like, I've gotten the tiniest comics I've ever gotten from you.
Right.
I've got regular comics, again, like operas. Now you're doing something, like, your latest book actually looks like a Bible.
Right.
It's gilded.
Right.
You know? It's got the thing, Jesus' words are in red.
Yes.
Yeah.
The red letter version.
It's a red letter
version, yeah.
Blood of Christ.
I mean, that is something I really enjoy about your work, is there's always something interesting in the presentation. And very seldom is it...
It has the cushioned feel to the book as well, so it's...
Oh, it does feel good in your hand.
It has that
cushioned... the fake leather
plush.
But you don't seem to do the same thing twice.
Very classy.
Well,
there's only one Bible, Ian.
What's that?
It's only one Bible.
No, there's two now. Did you not hear about it earlier?
Did you hear the good words?
Yeah. But that is something I really enjoy about your work and why I follow you. I really do follow you. Is that...
About 10 feet away.
Even though it's the same characters, it's like, now he's married? What's this about? Or the stuff that you put up on Facebook and what have you.
Right. Yeah, no, I don't want to be bored. I mean, that was a fear. And actually, that was right when the opera started, I had just quit doing Too Much Coffee Man, and not because I was bored with it, but in part because I was worried that this was going to be the only thing that I did.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was an external reason. And then the opera kind of fell in my lap, and I thought, this is, okay, I'll do that as well. But pushing to say, what am I going to do, other like be known for other than Too Much Coffee Man? And it took the New Yorker to pull me out of that. And thankfully, I mean, they have such a reputation,
yeah,
and it takes such a amount of work to get in there. All of a sudden, I'm now like the coffee guy and a New Yorker guy,
yeah,
and amazing, a Bible guy.
So you have two collections of your New Yorker cartoons?
Three now. Yeah.
And then you have a collection of ones that were not accepted.
Well, they were three collections of the rejected. So
okay.
They're all,
oh,
none of them.
Oh,
none of
them
were accepted.
Wow.
When I first saw you doing that, I thought, oh, you've just done the gag of these are cartoons that the New Yorker would never put out there.
Right.
And then I was reading, like, no, these are pretty, yeah, the New Yorker could do these. These are great. And I thought that was your gimmick. It was just like, hey, guess what? Yeah, Johnny Alternative submitted it. No, but, and then seeing you really were in there, it was fantastic.
Yeah, I was desperate to get in, and I pushed, and it was a internal push because I had to figure out, how does the humor work? How do I make this joke work? How do I, how does the New Yorker joke work?
And how do you trim it down to, like, it's the most concentrated form of joke I think there is as far as cartooning goes.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, and it's very, and people said, well, it's a specialized form of humor, too. And people said, does it bug you that you had to change your humor for them? And I said, no, it's a jazz club. You go to a jazz club, you play jazz. It's not, you have to learn how to do that. It's not a compromise by any stretch. It's really pushing yourself to a new level.
Yeah.
So.
Well, some of the greatest, you know, humorists worked as cartoonists for the New Yorker. I mean, it's an amazing company to be in.
And it's literal as well as figurative, because I go down to the office and there's Gayan Wilson, oh, and Sam Gross, you know, and it's just or Booth. I met Booth there. It's just, wow, it's like, holy crap, man. And then we all go out to lunch with Cypress, and it's just amazing. I mean, this is, I don't know, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Do they treat you well, or is it like, hey, look at the new meat. Hey, look at this, Mr. Hey, young guy.
For as pretentious a magazine as it has a reputation of being,
it's got a mascot with a monocle. That's how pretentious.
Right. Yeah. Although that was self-mocking, but yeah.
Oh, very good.
All right. That, yeah, they are so nice and so. I mean, except, like, I ask where the bathroom is, and Sam Gross walks me down there, and there's three stalls, but they don't have the dividers between them, and he gets in the middle, right? He takes the middle one. Like, mostly you take the far end, so you give yourself a spacer.
Yeah.
But no, and he's talking to me the whole time. But, oh. Yeah. So then. We're going down as in the army and da, da, da. And you know, he's just, you know, with a stage
fright. Speechless. He is
speechless. Yeah. I could not pee. That was it. I was like, you know, that I never have had a problem with that before or after in my life. But that one time, I'm like, I have stage fright. This is it. I cannot pee in front of Sam Gross.
He had a drawing table in there. So
that's
you
the
don't
thing,
know.
Yeah. He
never
works
stops.
In there, too. He's such a, yeah,
time
he's a productive
is
fellow. Time is money. Yes. Yeah, well, we had another guest on the show who peed beside Bob Hope, and I think that would also be... That would be kind of intimidating as well.
I would think so.
We could just do a best of your urinating stories.
That's true.
well,
for future
we
shows...
We actually did, too, because... You know, Dave met a lot of famous people for a fanzine of his.
That's right.
He used to always corner them in the bathroom.
Buttonhole in the bathroom because...
Not talk to him. You know, you had to stand there for at least 30 seconds.
Yeah, you can't
like,
get away.
Like, chit-chat.
You wouldn't mind being in my fanzine that I photocopy and sell 5 copies of it as record stores.
It wasn't a punk club because they would have just turned to face you.
Yeah, that's right. It's exactly. Yes. Yeah, you had to do this with gentlemen, not just anyone. Be selective in who you... buttonhole in a bathroom. That sounds like a terrible word to use with bathroom, actually. I'm going to think of a new word for that. I'll work on it while you guys are talking.
No,
I'm going to be quiet for a while I think about
it. Now, doing like the single panel cartoons, do you then get jazzed to do the longer stories, or do you just get into that one mindset and it's tough to break out of it?
A little bit of both. To break out of the single panel, I have to think it's okay for every panel to not be funny. Like some panels are bridge panels, and to say this isn't about the gag, this is about a build or a situation. And I do have to, it's switching gears. But it's nice to say, hey, I know how to do this and I can relax back into this. And there's breathing room in here.
Yeah.
And also I can move back into more meta humor, which really appeals to me. Where the New Yorker, they tend to avoid meta humor, tend to avoid puns, tend to avoid kind of slapstick or sort of a meanness.
Yeah, you seem to have like gotten your own niche though in there. Like, you know, you're not doing jokes that are the type of, there's no one behind it. Well, maybe there's a person behind a desk. Yes, you've used a desk in your time. But like there isn't what I would call the tip, nothing against typical New Yorker thing stuff seems unique.
What do you have against it?
What do I have against the New Yorker?
Yeah.
Two dogs having a conversation about business, that kind of thing, you know?
My favorite.
Like, how do they start that business?
My favorite New Yorker cartoon is an R. Taylor one. It was one, he drew the kind of big eyes, but it's one with penguins, and there's a penguin. All the other penguins are normal penguins, but this one's wearing a flat cap with a kind of a, a tweed jacket with an ascot.
Right.
He's saying, I got tired of being so damned formal all the time. This is perfect. This is the perfect joke.
That's good. I like it.
Yeah. Those are the kind of, like, they do like nonsense in the New Yorker. It's just a particular style of nonsense that they'll go for. I mean, they wouldn't have published Charles Adams if they didn't like nonsense. So.
Oh, he was great. The first, I got the first cartoon sold, and I'm walking down the street, and I run into two friends of mine, and they're like, what are you up to? And I just sold my first cartoon to the New Yorker. And without a beat, one of them goes, oh, what was it? Two cats talking? And then the other guy goes, yeah, saying something pithy. And then he goes, yeah, like something that's kind of funny and zeitgeisty and now, but you're going to have to explain to people in about 5 years. And it just went online. And I was like, yeah, it was.
Are they on an island? Yeah, and is there a chart behind them showing sales graph and it's going up?
But it was two cats talking and one says, didn't I see you on YouTube riding a Roomba? And I was like, God damn it, my friends are such a-holes. Like, it's amazing. Like, but it was great. I mean, it warmed my heart. I thought, like, thank God I have these friends. I mean, thank God that there's a checks and balances on this, you know.
Deflate that balloon a little bit.
It was great. Yeah, I mean, that just made me laugh so hard.
that is amazing that you made it in, I have to say, because I it almost has a feeling of a closed club in a way that's...
But it's not. It really is just, do you want to pay the dues?
Yeah.
Do you want to put in the sweat? Do you want to figure out how to do this? And put in the work to learn and teach yourself? And it's one of the more open clubs that
really
is out there.
So it's just about... So you changed your drawing style for it. You had to simplify it. And,
I simplified. I changed pens. I tried a lot of... It freaked me out because I love cross-hatching and I love detail and I needed to go simple.
Sure.
And so I bought a pen that had a hard nib and so the line weight would be not... It would be static rather than have like this weighted line weight. You know, I like that sort of brush look.
Sure.
And I love cross-hatching. Mm. And I dropped both those things and I moved into, I got gray pens to create that sort of gray tonal areas.
Sure.
Yeah, I was like, what can I do to make this work? How do I do this? And that's what I did. And
did you go back and study older cartoons?
No, more than study. I would copy cartoons that I liked and just line for line what they draw and I would draw that. I mean, I was Matthew Broderick in War Games when he's trying to get that password. He's like, what is the, you know, the guy's, oh, he has a son, I'm gonna, you know, it's like, hello, what would you like to play? I mean, it was like, you know, and then the girl comes in and she's like, what have you been doing? You know, he's like, I mean, it's like the first hacking.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to do is I was like, how do I break this?
How
do I
code?
It was also, how do I break my own habits? Because I'd fallen into a lot of bad habits of drawing and writing, and I needed to tear down what I'd learned and to learn a new... It just made it sort of alive again and re-examine what I was doing.
So when you say like bad habits, do you just mean you kind of got lazy, or you self-satisfied, or
cheats? Where you know this works, like you know how to do this little shadow under the knee to make it look like there's a fold in the pants, and you always put that stupid fold right there.
Shannon Wheeler it. And you gotta
it's like doop, and you've got this little 3D fold, and you do that every time, and you're like, you know, that fold is there never, right? Like, but it looks good. But yeah, it's a cheat. It's a total cheat.
Yeah, good enough is really the enemy you got to overcome. It's interesting when you're talking about, like, hacking. Like, I'm going to get philosophical here. Because I do like your philosophical comic strips.
Ian's been drinking.
And it always feels like, doesn't always feel like, but I have been drinking. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, I know. Right
about the characters are trying to break out of patterns that they're in, destructive patterns.
Oh,
and so a lot of the cartoons I've seen you do that I really like are just analyzing human patterns and why we do this, even though we shouldn't do that. And, oh, now I'm going to get myself in the same trouble I've got into. And usually the character by the end has gotten to the same trouble by trying not to get into that same trouble.
Yes.
So I could totally see you, you know, going over things and trying to hack the code of, you know, what works, what doesn't. But unlike your characters, you were successful at it.
Hopefully. Although ultimately we never are. I mean, we are a victim of our own. We are, you know, we're living in our own skin. We're going to be constrained by our. But yeah, I want to find the limits of that.
It's part of human nature to cut corners. Because it's a way to survive, is to learn how to make things easier for ourselves. That's what we do.
Well, you also do what succeeded, you know. Yeah. So if that little fold succeeded, monkeys say, put stick in hole again, get out hands. You know, so, you know, monkey's not going to go find, something else to shove in there.
That's right.
Or maybe it will. I don't know what kind of monkey it is. what have you.
It's the worst, though, when you read somebody's comic and they stop inventing things. And you're reading it and you're just like, you just know how they're going to draw it. You know where the story's going to go. And it's horrible to read. I have no interest in...
Names, please?
Yeah, there are so many, like, cartoonists that, you know... I mean, I met you in the 90s, and there's so many...
I met you in the 90s, too.
That's right. At the Alternative Press Expo.
We were at
San Jose.
94,
wow.
8. Yeah, over there.
Wow.
And...
So far back it goes.
And there's a lot of cartoonists I like from that time, and I'm not going to name names, but if I read them now... They're still in that same room doing that same thing in that same way. Their characters, which are often based on themselves, you're like, how do you, you know, I don't know if it comes from fear or just comfort or what it is. But again, that's one of the things I like about reading your stuff is I'm reading the same characters often, but they're doing very, very different things. You're like, what the hell? This is miles away from what you started with,
right.
Which was, that's a funny gag. And now, what? He's talking about thinking about committing suicide. What? He's having problems with it. Oh, all right. What's this all about? But it definitely keeps me reading.
That's great.
Yeah,
no, it's more to keep me interested in doing it. I mean, I'm just trying to, push till I die. I don't know.
Well, we don't have much time left, so I just want to get back to the how are we doing on our recording?
I don't know what our time's like, but we're fine with the recording. We're
okay,
fine.
Good. Cause
I love it.
Didn't sound too much. Like,
all right, we got like about six minutes left.
Okay, well, do you want to...
Our gentleman friend here has to leave.
Do we want to circle back around and go back to the Bible just for a little bit?
I love the Bible.
You love the Bible?
I do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the funny thing is that doing this actually gave me this a genuine appreciation of the Bible, where I went in thinking I want to learn about this, and now I feel like, wow, there's a lot there, and there's a reason that it has resonated over the ages.
Well, I told you the story, but I'm just going to repeat it for listeners, which is I saw a stand-up comic, and she found this book called The Bible for Teens, and she was so happy to find it because she just thought this was going to be the well of comedy gold. Just, you know, it's just going to give her an act for the next 10 years. But she sat down and started reading it with this kind of, you know, wry, you know, ironic way to... And she was amazed at the wisdom in it. And she's like, this book is great for explaining the Bible and how much wisdom is there, you know. And when we were talking about it earlier, you said I guess Mark Russell had said to you, it's kind of this conversation, of generations of Jews conversing with each other.
Mark said more arguing. And there's a kibbutzing or kvetching.
Yeah.
The kvetching is complaining. But, it's that argument... arguments of like, this is how you live your life. No, this is how you live your life.
Yeah,
and it's ideological arguments.
For sure. But it's topical too in the sense that they were writing it for their times.
Yes.
This is how you live your times now. You've been captured by the Babylonians. Now you have to live your life this way. You walked into this you made this happen. Now how are you going to deal with it? You know, and when the Babylonian exile was over, then now we have to live, find a new way to live. You know, and it's this constant topical discussion, you know, that's happening right at that moment.
Absolutely. Know? And like Revelations made sense all of a sudden when John is hiding out in a cave.
Yeah.
And his friends and family, everybody's being murdered. His world is ending. And so he's writing about the world ending.
Yeah.
And so the beast is Nero. And now, all of a sudden, I look at Revelation and it makes sense to me.
Totally.
Whereas before, when I tried to read it, yeah, I thought, this is a fever dream and this is somebody on acid. Or,
exactly, you know, because we come at it without any historical knowledge.
Right.
And we live in this kind of rebuilt Revelation understanding. Is it some sort of prediction of what's to come for us? Not what was happening to them.
Right, and it was a very specific...
Yeah, exactly.
But Ecclesiastes is the book that I ended up liking the most,
okay,
where...
Which is kind of a book of wisdom, or a wisdom book.
Yeah, it was existential.
Yeah.
It was this guy who just said, yeah, we live these lives, and I was reading Ecclesiastes, it's like, wait, these are my ideas. This is I've worked on it too much. Like, this is... But it was resonating in this weird way where that was the book. And that shocked me more than anything, because I didn't expect to find something that would...
speak to you?
Yeah, speak to me so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it. I mean, that's a great thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Surprising.
I think something we were talking about the Book of Revelation is that... is it Revelations or Revelation?
Revelation, I think.
Single. All right, there's only one. Okay, good. Good to know. I don't know. I went to Catholic school. I don't know. They told me some stuff. I think the problem with that one is the people who told you about it had an agenda, and that agenda was often crazy bananas.
That's
and they were
the
trying
problem.
To scare you like it was a ghost story.
Right.
And
that's
so, but, you know, and they weren't much for historical context. They were more for... this is what it is, and this is what I want you to do.
It really depends on the tradition that you come out of. As a, you know, I'm an Anglican, and so our tradition is a kind of three-legged stool, as they call it, of, you know, liturgy, tradition, and education. So the sense that the more you know as a laity, the better informed you are, the better Christian that you make. You know, and rather than living in this sort of blindfolded, blinkered, you know, ignorance. Which is a big part. I mean, you know, obviously any organization is about power, and so religion becomes a thing about power too. It becomes a club rather than something that's about wisdom and living and, you know, existing in the world as we know it. It just becomes this giant club that people are hit on the head with. And the Bible is probably one of the biggest clubs ever invented.
Great time. How's that? How's the time?
I'll tell you. We are right now at
45.
We're at 27 minutes.
Okay. Now I got
time to wrap it up.
Right after
okay.
This.
All
right.
Wrap it up.
Thanks.
All right. Well,
tempted, but.
You know, the one thing I did think when I was a kid is like, if the Bible had cartoons, I would be in it. Like, this would hook me.
Well, right. There were the dentist office ones that had the wonderful watercolor pictures in them of scenes from the Bible. Those always made me want to look at them.
It's sort of like I give my kids The New Yorker, and they'll read the cartoons, and then every now and again they'll start reading a longer fiction piece.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it sort of sucks them into
Steve
this.
Martin, why not?
Right.
Get into that.
Or J.D. Salinger is in there sometimes. Yeah.
Kids love a J.D. Salinger.
Oh, man. Seymour Glass. The kids love him.
But it's the cartoons that sort of suck them in. And same way, like suck them into the reading these longer stories by reading the cartoons. I love it.
That's awesome. Okay, well, I guess we're going to wrap it up. Is that what
we're
saying?
Absolutely, yeah. We have our bowl of salty things.
We have
this gives you about 3 minutes to have as many of these as you can before we leave.
Before you crawl out of here like you just escaped from the desert.
So where can people get your book? Where, bookstores?
Bookstores, you know, theoretically.
Those still exist, right?
I've heard of them.
We're doing,
definitely, you know, Amazon, definitely Powell's has done phenomenal for us. And then if you want, like, the signed copies, Mark and I will sign copies. Do it through Etsy, and actually I'm selling all the original art off there at pretty cheap prices, and anywhere.
All right, is there a website or anything else besides, like, is there a ShannonWheeler.something?
There's the tmcm.com,
okay.
That is my website that's very poorly run.
Everyone's is.
It still has a blue background with yellow writing on it.
And angel fire.
I would
at the
love
bottom.
That, actually.
a little dancing baby in the corner that you just can't stop.
I looked back at my old websites and I was like, wow, these actually look pretty good, all things considered. 256 colors, but you know.
Thank you.
Wonderful. All right. So go to that website.
Yes.
Get the book.
Get the book. Definitely get the book.
Get all this stuff. It's great.
Get
the
book.
New thing coming out.
I had to pay. I had to pay hundreds of dollars to you know, learn the Bible, and so this will cost you $20, and you will know more than I do.
The best review we had, which was a bad review, the guy was angry at the book, sort of, and he said, "What made him upset with the book is that non-Christians would read the book and end up knowing more about the Bible than Christians."
Yeah, those guys. I hate those guys.
It was kind of a tongue-in-cheek. I mean, it was a pretty funny.
So get this book. It's the one they don't want you to read.
Exactly.
Even if you're anti the whole Bible, they don't want you to read this. So pick it up for that.
The guys who can like quote scripture to you to prove their points about things, they're the worst.
Usually Leviticus.
You want to point out to them that, you know, you're taking the name of God in vain, by the way.
Definitely do not read page 76. That's the big, dirty page.
Okay.
Oh, nice. I got the book right here. I'm really excited.
Okay, we're going to look at it.
Well, thanks so much. Shannon Wheeler's been our guest. I'm Ian Boothby.
Thanks, Shannon.
I'm
David Dedrick. Sorry,
you're still David Dedrick, and this has been Sneaky Dragon on location in the loudest bar in the world.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I
love it. That was great.
And yes, that was a noisy place, I think we'd all agree. And thank you to Shannon Wheeler for taking some time out of his busy, busy con day. He was really busy on Saturday and was selling tons of books. And he was nice enough to squeeze us in between the end of the con day and him going out for dinner. And I think he may have even been late going out for dinner because he sat there talking to us. So we really appreciate it, Shannon. Thank you very much, and I hope you appreciated it despite the din. And next up is Gail Simone, who was kind enough to talk to us at the con. And Gail is another super busy person. She has tons of panels. She always has people at her table. So it was very kind of her to take a few minutes out of her busy day to sit down and talk to us. And Gail is a writer for DC Comics, and she is writing for Red Sonja right now. She tells us in the show that she's looking into doing some creator-owned comics in the very near future. So that would be very interesting. And I've heard that she's moving on to another big company, and I asked her some questions about that, but she was rather cagey. So good on you, Gail, for keeping cards close to your vest. So anyway, here's Gail Simone.
Hi, everybody. This is Sneaky Dragon in Seattle. I'm Ian Boothby.
I'm David Dedrick.
And we're here with our friend Gail Simone. And you can talk now. That's okay.
Hello, everyone.
Sorry.
Sorry you're not here with us in Seattle.
Yes. Then you could enjoy the lineups for the Cheesecake Factory like everybody else. There's,
yes.
It's amazing the amount of time people will wait for food here.
Yes, and I only can
and
imagine.
Coffee.
And coffee, that's right.
And sushi, judging by the lineup at the sushi place. I'm still not believing you that it brews quickly.
But we're all here now, and everything's good. Now, Gail, we've known each other since you were working on a comedy thing called You'll All Be Sorry.
That was I know. It's so incredible. And then you have written some of the best Simpsons comics and Futurama comics, so we always have been talking about that back and forth quite a bit too.
Yeah, and one of the nicest things was getting to know you back then, and you were as nice as you are funny, and so that's there. That the compliment is out of the way.
There you go.
Now we can move on with everything.
Now we can say terrible, hateful things.
Now let's
end
just
of
go,
the log rolling.
Let's just go back to the You'll All Be Sorry, which was a hilarious satire of comics that you did for Comic Book Resources. How did that come about?
It kind of came about, sort of a strange story for those of you who haven't heard it. I was a hairdresser and I had my own salon and I worked full time in there in the daytime. And because I'm an insomniac, I would do things at night to keep myself amused. And I've always loved comics, and we didn't have a comic store in my little town. So the only place to find someone to talk about comics was online. And I started doing that, and then I started just doing little parodies just for friends that I'd made online. Mm-hmm. And then that led to the column and having it weekly and just doing all these parody columns. So obviously I did not set out to work in the comics industry. If you go by my original website that I set up called Women in Refrigerators, which kind of called out the entire industry on their treatment of female characters, and then parodying nearly every single aspect of the comics industry.
With the, but what you did do with that was you did what I think is great, which is you did the voices perfectly so that you could turn on them and be incredibly cruel and hilarious. You know, so you could write a good Wolverine, and then Wolverine takes that turn into doing something Wolverine would never, ever do.
Well, that's true.
My favorite probably was the X-Men one where they went up against a guy called Ham Hands. Was that it? Am I remembering that correctly?
I think so, yeah.
Right, and it just like parodied the ham-handed messages that X-Men always shoves down your throat.
Yes. They do show them now. I was just going to ask, because you ran a barbershop, but it didn't occur to you to have comic books in your, as part of, like, you start a store, your own store, or was that not an interest of you?
No, we did have a few comics for kids just laying around, not that much because I didn't really have that many kids, unfortunately, go through the salon because I live in a town with a lot of retired people.
Oh, okay. Even having a comic book shop would have been completely impossible then.
Yeah, I don't know. We have had them a couple different times in the last 30 years, but they never stay very long,
sure.
It's sad. So thank goodness for digital is what I say.
That was a big part of me discovering comics, actually, was them being at the barbershop where I went as a kid. And you could always read, there'd always be a pile of comics there.
Yeah, I discovered them at garage sales. Isn't that crazy?
That's good, too.
Did you get the ones with the torn-off covers?
No, not so much. I think they were, like, probably collections that people adored that their parents decided needed to go to the garage sales.
That's how I got most of my record albums. There was a dad who didn't like his hippie son listening to that damn music. So he go, well, I'm going to give them to the kid next door. And then so I ended up getting a lot of great records out of that.
That's the best.
So the comedian was born.
Now, have you ever wanted to do performing comedy? You're a great comedy writer.
I don't know. You know, I did major in theater arts, and I did it from the time I was really young, mostly because my mom said, you're too shy. You need to do this.
I had the exact same
thing. Yeah, and so it did really help with that. It was easier to get up and talk to people if you could be someone else.
Yep.
And so I love that. But I learned while in college majoring in theater arts that I really loved the creating the scripts, and one of our assignments was to write little skits and scripts and then perform them, and I realized that I really liked writing them and then controlling what happened after that more than doing the performing. So I kind of like to be the project manager behind the scenes.
And that's really what comics ends up being in the end. Well, when you start taking over, like, first of all, with the All Be Sorry, sorry to keep coming back to that, but it was something I really admire.
She really is sorry.
You were great with the voices, and then when you took over, or when you started doing Simpsons, like, that's a deceptive, and again, I write it, but it's a deceptively simple, hard book, because you've got so many voices that you've got to nail, and if any of them are wrong...
Yeah, everyone will call you out on it, sure.
But I think you've got near perfect pitch for characters, and when you take over books, everyone sounds like they should. It's definitely a story you're doing, because the plot goes in a direction that, you know, is your style, but no one sounds... Like, Batman does not sound like he's not Batman when he shows up in your book.
Well, I think I will say that is one thing that my theater experience did help, in listening to dialogue and trying to figure out how different characters would actually speak on stage and stuff. And so when it came to trying to capture that, I had been doing that for a long time. And then I call upon people, you know, will you just say this line, and then I can sort of hear the rhythm when it's out loud.
Yeah.
Because I think it's right in my head, but sometimes, you know, when it's said out loud, it's a little different. So I practice, and dialogue's like my big pet peeve in terms of every character sounding like themselves, whether you're seeing the picture or the character or whatever. You should know who that is just by looking at the words and not have them all be the same. So I do pay attention to that.
Yeah, I think when you were doing Birds of Prey, which is a book you're quite well known for doing, what was great about it was, you did have very distinct characters who up until that point in many other books were quite generic. Like, you could exchange a black canary with a huntress in a lot of stories and have the same dialogue, but you had them be very, very different. I think you've got near perfect pitch when it comes to characters. Just as a writer, like, I can pick that up when I'm reading it. It's
You know, in order to avoid stereotypes and to avoid that generic feeling, you kind of have to sit down and figure out where your characters are coming from and what they want and what breaks their heart and what, you know, what would make them the happiest, what would be their perfect life, what would be their worst life, and then put things up against them to challenge. And in that process, you know, I'm always thinking, you know, this is an intelligent character who has a photographic memory. She's not going to talk like somebody who is a smart aleck and wears her heart on her sleeve and just says the first thing that comes into her mind, into her head. So that's how I design and try to form those dialogues and make them different from each other. And, you know, those three characters, it'd be so easy just to give them the same voice.
Which
why,
is usually a good idea, Batman.
But
we'll
why
do that.
Yeah, but why do that when you've got a super intelligent character, a character that doesn't have a filter basically on what she's thinking and what she's saying, and then you have a character who could just go rogue and start killing people at any moment. Why would you want them all to sound the same? It just seems crazy.
It does seem crazy.
That's the fun of writing. Let's, you know, is to give them different voices.
I was just thinking another thing that you do is you make characters that are not necessarily the nicest people. You make them very sympathetic. So you have something like Secret Six, where you have characters who are kind of on the edge of, you know, on the edge of goodness and badness, and they, and but they're still sympathetic characters. You still are on their side. You know what they do. You. And that's also important, the way that you can make characters come alive.
Well, that's because I'm such a manipulative writer. I feel like that's my job, is to trick you into maybe being sympathetic or like them, and then all of a sudden they do something so horrible that you're just like, oh, why did I like that person? And now I feel bad that I enjoyed it. So, yeah, it's kind of fun. I really enjoy doing that as, you know, when I put something out that people are reading along and they're going in one direction and they think they know what to expect, and then we do something completely different to kind of play with their perceptions and whether or not they feel good about how sympathetic they were towards those characters.
My God, it's like you're an author.
I like to play those psychological games.
Yeah.
You also go darker than most comics go, and you're able to pull it off. In that it's not to the point of losing the audience.
Sorry.
It's not so cruel, but it's, oh my gosh, I can't not stop turning the page and see what happens when the guy gets pulled into that chest. But that, well, I mean the kind of chest that you open and put things in.
Yes,
it's
we got
still
that.
About manipulation. Someone asked me one time in a panel, you know, do you like things to be happen on panel or off panel? And my answer was, I really like it when there's just enough on panel that the thing that terrifies you the most is what's happening in your brain in between the panels, because that will make you much more scared than if I tell you what it is. And so that's part of my manipulation of your, you know, fear or whatever too. And I love it. And I love to hear the feedback from people about, oh my God, I had nightmares all night. And I'm like, gee, I'm sorry, but that is so awesome. And I've even had artists tell me, like, I wrote a short story for the American Vampire Anthology, and the artist emailed me and she said, you know, on this last page, I was coloring it and I had to stop in the middle of it, go throw up, and then come back and finish. And I said, oh my God, I'm so sorry, but that is the most amazing thing I've ever heard.
That's great. So I guess I was thinking, you've been with DC for a long time. Now you've moved to a kind of a new universe with a new character, is that right? So what has that been like different for you? Like, has that been a change? Have you had to kind of...
Well, it's been kind of exciting in a way. You know, I've worked for DC for a long time, and I love working for them, and love their characters and doing, creating new things and all that. And this year I just had the opportunity, because my exclusive came up, and I've been able to write several different books that are strong female leads to prove that we can do that and have them be completely different from each other.
Sure.
And that will work. And so we've got Red Sonja is nothing like Batgirl, and Batgirl's nothing like, you know, Lara Croft, really.
Yeah.
So it's really, they've got their own motivations, their own reasons why they do what they do, and their own visual looks, and it's just been a blast to say, hey, look, you guys, this can be done.
Great. Good.
Now, you've also written for film. You've written for the Wonder Woman movie. You were the animated version of it. Though it would have made a good live movie as well. What do you find the differences are? Sorry, this is a generic question. What do you find the differences are between working for, say, television, film, and comics?
Well, you've done that as well.
I should just answer it.
Yeah,
so anyway, the difference is, to answer my own question.
For me, what I found is there's a couple things. In comics, there might be a few editors. In television, there's like, you know, 20, 30 people you have to keep happy instead of just a couple. That's right off the bat. And then there's things that we can show you know, visually, that with movement that we can't necessarily in comics. So you keep that in mind. We can't maybe have quite as much dialogue on film as we can get away with in comics on the page, for one thing. So you have to say a lot with very little dialogue. And mm-hmm. so I'm very careful about trying to pinpoint just the right, I mean, I am in comics too, but you have a little bit more room. And in film, it's a lot more difficult, and you really got to say as much as you can in the short amount of time, this least little amount of words. So I find that to be the challenge sometimes. And it's just, you still have to have well-rounded, non-stereotypical characters and a compelling story and plot that people want to know what's going to happen. It's just, with comics, we have an unlimited budget of special effects that we can do whatever we want, and we can, you know, things can work on the page that can't work in film and vice versa. So,
yeah, and sometimes in the film, you can let the music do the job for a little bit and just hit the mood for a bit. Like, you carry this for a little bit.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Take it that way.
You can have your breath. And timing is a little different, too, I think, between stuff on the page and stuff in film.
Well, I find whenever people say, like, it's impossible to do a Wonder Woman film, there was one. It's animated. Go take a look and see. This is very doable. So what have you got, because we don't have a lot of time here and want to get you back to the things that you're here for, what's coming up for you?
I all the new stuff that we don't know about that's coming up, I'm not ready to
Absolutely.
Announce yet.
Absolutely, anything that...
But I would say...
Let's just say it rhymes with Stitchy Stitch.
In 2015, I'm doing a couple creator-owned projects that I'm very excited about and working really hard on right now. To get developed and get ready to go, and so I'm concentrating on creating some very new stuff.
Great.
Wow, great.
So it's a good kind of exciting right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm so excited about everything I'm doing right now and the stuff that I'm working on for the future. It's incredible.
And let me say, I love watching your lineups because people adore your work and they're so delighted to see you. And
I'm delighted to see them.
Yes, yes.
Except for us.
Yeah.
We did not get
the
delay.
No, I'm very delighted to see you guys.
All right, and let me also say that your husband is a very mean man.
I know, he's horrible.
Yeah, he's a very low. I just wanted to get
everybody
that out of the way.
Everybody tweet to Rocket Spouse right now about how mean he is.
Yeah, he was, he made my daughter cry with
Uh-oh.
Laughter.
Well, thank you so much for being part of this. We're really glad we got around to it. And as I said, you're one of our favorites.
Oh, thank you. And you are one of my favorites as well.
Aces. All right, I've been Ian.
I've been David.
And I'm Gail Simone.
This has been Sneaky Dragon. Somewhere, I don't know where we are
I don't
right
even
now.
Know anymore.
I'm very tired.
Emerald City Comic Con.
Oh, there you go.
Seattle,
okay, there
Washington,
we go. Right.
Where it's coffee and rain.
Thank you,
Thanks
Gail.
Thanks so much. That was great.
Yes, thank you, Gail. Thanks very much for talking with us. We really appreciate it. And that's nice of her to do, despite the fact that I mixed everything up by not looking at my watch and coming back late when I had said I would be there at a particular time. And everyone was looking at me like, what are you doing, Dedrick? So, and that's usual. I'm used to that look, so wasn't that unexpected. So it didn't really faze me or affect the interview in any way at all. So Nick, let's just go on with our show. Let's go on with the show. Like the Merry Melodies once said, the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Hour, let's get on with the show. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. I don't know why I'm wasting time with that. Let us go to Fan Expo, where it was just Ian and I sitting at a table looking really cool. I don't want to boast, but we were the coolest looking people in the entire con. Both of us were wearing sweaters with shirts. Couple of nerds. One of the things, we look like substitute teachers who had shown up at a convention. And we were at our table. There's no guests, but lots of interruptions because Ian was signing books, and so you'll get to hear him very loudly because the microphone was right there. You can hear him talking back and forth with customers. It's like you're there. We're just trying to say, what's it like to be at a con? This is what it's like. Hopefully you enjoy it. Hi everyone, welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
And I'm Ian Boothby.
And today we're back at Fan Expo in Vancouver here. This is our second attempt. The first one I thought was a complete failure, so I thought, let's do it again.
Dave, you say you were back, but you've always been here.
I've always been back.
Yes.
I'm constantly back.
If you look at any photos of Fan Expo, you'll see Dave in the back behind the Totoros and the Sailor Moons.
You'll just see my back.
The many Sailor, the many Spider-Mens, the Harley Quinns, you will find him.
Keep rhyming.
Was I actually rhyming?
You started rhyming there. It's good. The Harley Quinns, the Batmans, the Spider-Mans.
Now, those of you that know what time
Sneaky
this...
Sneaky Dragon.
Yeah, no Sneaky Dragon. Those of you that know what day the con is taking place on will know that it's 4:20 when we're doing this.
We're doing, yes. It's,
and
it's,
Vancouver takes that holiday very seriously.
There was a large... It was like a carnival atmosphere for smoking weed around the Vancouver Art Gallery.
There was a real cloud of anticipation over this day.
There was a real cloud of anticipation.
So so some people that are in our area probably might have partaken.
Well, today at church we sang "When Took Over the Line, Sweet Jesus." That was our whatever hymns today. So this in celebration of, you know, that day.
That's right. What religion do you belong to again, Dave?
Well, we're Anglicans, you know.
Oh, okay. That all makes sense now. That all makes sense. We're here, and we're in the heart of Vancouver nerd culture.
Yes.
We are surrounded right now by many people. Like, here's the thing. It's Easter time. I keep thinking people are dressed as rabbits. Of course, it's adventure time.
Yeah. It's adventure time.
Yeah,
that's right.
We talked on our last show about, you know, what the most common outfits were, and I think like Frozen is like the most commonest I've seen.
It's definitely a word that doesn't exist.
that's true. Well, none of this exists. Spider-Man doesn't really exist.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Not at all.
No.
Not even as a comic book.
Yes, it does exist as a comic book, but Spider-Man is not a real person.
You confuse me. I was starting to wonder what part of the construct was or wasn't real in The Matrix. So,
well, speaking of what's... Okay.
Speaking as a brain in a jar.
Now, there are a lot of people that are high probably around us right now, mm-hmm. and one of those is David, because David, as you may know if you listen to the show, has been on a sugar fast for the last 40 days.
Yeah.
I believe that's something to do with Noah's Ark.
Noah?
Dave was so excited about seeing the film Noah that he went for 40 days.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like the animals in Noah on the Ark and have no sugar.
That's right.
Because as you know, Noah had no sugar.
Yeah,
when he was on the ark. There was no room for sugar.
It was a good title for the film. They anticipated that Noah 1 would see that movie.
That's right. Yeah. So today, for the first time in 40 days, David is partaking of sugar.
Yeah.
Now, in front of me, I have gummies, I have Kinder eggs, I have jelly beans,
yes.
I have sugar-coated things that are already gelatinous. Dave is having a lemonade I got him.
Brought me a lemonade.
What have you had previous to this, sugar-wise?
I had some Pepsi last night at dinner.
Yeah.
And I ate a Big Turk bar. Turkish Delight.
Okay, so it was something that no one would enjoy. So that was your bitter herbs.
That is my chocolate bar of choice. Because I'm not a huge chocolate fan. Like, if you said to me, do you want a chocolate bar? My first thought is, yeah, I want a gummy bear. No, I don't want a chocolate bar. I don't really like chocolate bars.
Okay, so if I ask you if you want a chocolate bar, you'll say, I want a gummy bear.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
If I ask you, you want a pork chop, you'll say to me, I want some mac and cheese.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I can't say that, right? Because if someone offers you a chocolate bar, you have to say, I want a chocolate bar. You can't go, I want to go off menu.
Yeah. Do you want to go see a movie? You say, I want to do a podcast.
I want to do a podcast. That's how it happened. That's how it started.
Yeah. Because Dave is very random.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so what the Big Turk is, it's like a combination of of chocolate, which I think is okay, and candy, which I think is awesome. So it's like the perfect thing for me.
Now, they call it a Big Turk.
Yeah.
Is there a moderately sized Turk or a Little Turk?
I think it's one of those bars that uses big in a way to fool you into thinking that it's bigger than any other Turkish Delight bar.
Well, now,
there is the Cadbury Turkish Delight, which we don't sell here in Canada, but you can buy like at a store that sells British
chocolate
bars.
You can buy it on the black market.
You can buy it in the black market or stores that sell British black market chocolate bars.
Now, what is a bigger bar, the Big Turk or the Mr. Big?
Mr. Big. Mr. Big is actually lives up to its title.
Whereas
and we're talking about chocolate bars again. This is, it's a nerd show.
No, it's not that it's a nerd show. It's that you're back on sugar.
That's true.
Clearly, we're going to talk about chocolate bars on a show where you're back on the sugar.
Sure. Okay.
We have to.
Yeah.
Well, we can talk about nerdy things if you'd prefer, because we're in the middle of nerd culture.
We'll get there.
Okay. Am I aimed too far away from the microphone?
No, you're fine.
All right.
Yeah, you sound good.
Once again, Dave's pet peeve is people at panels that do not face the microphone.
Face the microphone. Please face the microphone.
But no, it's been very fun here. I was able to get a little bit of sleep this morning, which has been nice.
Because I was late picking you up.
Oh, that was great. Nice. When Dave yesterday was saying, like, I'm going to be late because I'm at church, I was like, oh, you know, this is the greatest gift a church has ever given me. It's fantastic. I went to Catholic school for many years, and this was the sweetest gift.
This is better than Catholic school.
Oh, it's better than Christmas, man. That is, I don't often get gifts on Easter. Actually, that reminds me, when I was at the drugstore, they had Easter gifts. That seems incorrect.
Yeah, seems wrong.
No,
it
just
feels like they're trying to, you know, well, the thing is
don't Valentine's
it. They got Christmas.
Yeah.
They kind of took over Christmas, so now they want to get Easter.
Well, the other thing is, they have kind of romantic gifts, and I'm like, knock it off. Valentine's Day, as we've said, is the worst holiday there is.
Yeah. What do you say to the person, hey, he died for your sins? And then you hand them the gift.
Then you hand them a sexy negligee.
Sexy negligee. That's right.
That's right. Yeah. Let's roll this sensual rock back. After
I think I nailed
days.
It. That's how you describe it.
Oh, the nailing it jokes. So was church very full this morning?
Oh, it was absolutely packed.
And everyone turned to those people and went, blasphemers, disbelievers, thanks for jumping on the wagon.
That's right. Now you show up. What's interesting in our church, because our church, it burned down about 12 years ago. It was a victim of arson
really?
At Halloween, yeah. And so for about 8 years, no, not quite that long, about 5 years, the church, we had our services in school gymnasiums around Aldergrove.
Right, and while you were playing basketball.
While they were playing basketball.
This is the fittest church you've ever seen. These guys rock hard ass.
That's right.
Just do some laps and do some psalms. I don't know what you would do.
Do
I couldn't think of what you would do.
Some power psalms.
It's been a long time since I've been in a church. I'm sorry.
And so so what they got used to, though, is the fact that you could take chairs and just move them any which way you want. And so when we actually built the church, we don't have pews in it. We have just little comfortable cushioned chairs that can be moved to suit whatever we want. We can have them in the round. We can have a traditional all facing the same direction service. And so, but today it was so packed that there was people that had to sit in the uncomfortable old pews that are kind of lined the back walls.
Oh, there you go, old school.
Yeah, and so they're like, the people have to sit straight up in the torture, you know, the chairs that if you want to accuse church of being like a brainwashing institution, like the first thing you should point to is the pews, which are like, you know, the kind of like the beginning of how to, you know, brainwashing techniques is to put people in really uncomfortable chairs that they can't fall asleep in. You know, whereas the chairs we have now, they're quite comfortable to fall asleep in, actually.
Yeah, of course.
I can speak from experience.
I'm going to say hi to someone. Hello there. Feel free to look at anything you'd like. We do a podcast called Sneaky Dragon, which we are actually doing right now talking to you. But there you go. No, you're not. You can have a free card, though, if you'd like.
Yeah.
So, I just remember when I used to go to church, we had those things you kneel on. I don't know what you call them.
Yeah, we don't have those. I wish we had those. There is a name and I can't remember.
Oh, well, let me just tell you this much. When I was a kid, we had them, but we had them non-padded.
Ouch.
And then they
What's the point then?
Well, here's the thing, though. They brought the padding in, and there was not a little bit of outrage from the older school people like, oh, now you need padding.
Yeah, no.
Oh, I guess Jesus died for your sins, but it hurts your knees when you kneel for a couple of seconds. Oh, boo-hoo.
If only it was a few seconds. I mean, during your prayers, it takes a while. So I would like, personally, I stand for prayers. It just depends. Once again, we're Anglican, so if you want to stand on your head for the prayer, they don't care. Whatever.
Well, again, you guys
lay
used to like shoot hoops back when you were like in the gym.
Prayers to the power, prayers to the people.
Yeah, you have like the squash court.
You just put power in front of it, and it sounds like it's a gym thing.
Look, I'm going to tell you right now. Yeah. I know you don't. The church doesn't necessarily need to make money, but if you guys did have exercise plus church, like there's people that go to the gym every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's some people that go to church every day. If you combine those two, that'd be perfect. You have a sermon while you're like on the treadmill.
People doing two things they don't like at the same time.
Yeah, you get it both done.
Yeah, you get them all done.
And then at the end, like you're all like sweaty, and you can get like baptized or whatever you do at the end, like just get the water.
A baptism of sweat.
Yeah. Well, no, you don't do that. Yeah.
Your own sweat has baptized you. By working out, you baptize yourself.
Well, that's an interesting concept. I'm going to talk to some people in a second.
Oh, okay.
Hello there. Hi. If you want to look at anything, feel free. If you want a free card, you're welcome
speaking
to...
Speaking as a person who's not...
We're just doing a podcast that we do called Sneaky Dragon.
Speaking as a person who... You know, okay, speaking as a greedy, secular person, I love Christmas. But speaking as a Christian, my favorite time of the year is Easter. Like, I love Easter service.
Why is that?
because it's such a happy time. I just love the happy after the kind of gloom of Monday, Thursday, Good Friday. Then you kind of move into the happy Easter vigil, which was last night, Saturday night.
Right.
And then this morning, the Easter morning service, which is this absolute happiness. Hallelujahs, come out of the closet.
Hallelujah, you know, come on, get happy.
That's right. You know, and it's just
chase all your blues away.
Chase all your blues away. Yeah, like
Dave, are you ready for the judgment day?
I no.
Okay, fair enough.
not at all.
Oh, that's where the song goes.
Oh, okay. Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, you're ready. Probably, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I'm not ready for that.
All right, that's fair.
I don't want it.
But you are ready.
Let's postpone
for
it a while longer, probably. But yeah, so I just love I love the hymns. I love all the happy hymns. I love the happiness of it. Our priest who's we have a kind of temporary priest who's been with the church for a long time, but she's fully in charge right now. And I love how she runs the services. And she just had a fantastic sermon today that was just really moving and uplifting. And you come out of it, and then the choir that I'm in, we did our anthem today. So we did this super like upbeat anthem, you know, and it just ended with this big like kind of huge exclamation. And then, you know, then we go on. It was just a lot of fun. I just really enjoyed it today.
And then everyone wrestles.
If I get choked up in church, it's most likely going to happen on Easter. Because it's more. That's more what I'm interested in as a Christian, is that aspect of that happy element of it. I'm really not that interested in the gloomy part of
Well, now, I think something that might be adding to the happiness is the amount of sugar that you're...
That doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
That doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I had orange juice this morning, which I haven't had for 40 days.
How did it taste after not having it for 40 days? Taste like you remember it?
Yeah. I'm not a big juice drinker, so it's okay. But
I've gone off sugar for long periods of time, and then like I'll have a Coke or something, and it just tastes ridiculous. Like, if you were trying Coke for the very first time in your life and you've never had it, that is a terrible, terrible drink.
Yeah?
It's awful. It just burns, and it's too much of everything, and it's like it's disturbing. But you've had it all your life, so you're used to it.
I think because I do drink Coke, but I don't drink it a lot. Like, I mean, I'll drink it at a restaurant.
Yeah.
But
when you do, you drink to excess and then get into fights.
We never have it at home. Like, I never have Coke in the house. And I never have, like, any kind of soft drinks in the house. So it's something that I just drink intermittently anyway. So when the sugar fast ends, I never feel like I'm overdoing it or it's crazy or whatever. Because my body's kind of used to that kind of once in a while. Bunch of sugar, okay, it's, you know.
Now, how was the rest of the family getting back on the sugar? Because they all did it with you.
Phyllis...
Okay, take care.
Phyllis was just mentioning that her eye was twitching last night, so, yeah. So I think she was overdoing it.
Yeah.
But she is much... both she and Millis tend to be more of a... Like, they don't have any restraint. Like, they cannot... You cannot put, like, chocolate in front of them. You know, if I had, like, a bowl of jelly beans, I could make it last a day or two. Mm-hmm. For them, that's a half an hour, and the whole bowl of jelly beans
okay.
is gone.
Okay, now I'm going to hold you to this, because there's a bowl of jelly beans in front of us, it's still there, but it is easily a quarter of what it was when this began.
I just want to point out that Phyllis was here with us, and now she's gone, and so
you know
it's
what?
Really
Phyllis is here in our hearts always.
She's always here in our hearts. So she's with us today, and she was really hitting those hard, so she actually went for a walk to stop herself.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
She said, my eyes starting to twitch again, I'm going for a walk. So, and I don't really feel, I don't experience that. I know that you talk about it, and you talk about like the sugar crash and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't experience sugar crash or anything else. I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm just such a boring person that there's like no up or down with me, that I'm always the same place. Maybe that's what it is.
You don't have any lows when you don't have any highs.
I don't have lows or highs. Yeah, I'm just kind of in this sort of general kind of good mood sort of place above.
Yeah, it's very, very nice.
It's above low, you know, just kind of in the... It's just in the... I mean, I'm always in a state of cheerfulness.
I had some people recognize me earlier. But speaking of highs, it's always nice to be recognized. Yeah. But I was recognized in the lineup to get my lemonade.
Okay.
And they said the same thing that the other people who recognized me here said. They weren't sure it was me, because they always see me on stage at a distance, and I'm a tiny, tiny person in the distance.
Yeah, yeah.
And close up, I guess my features look very different.
Yeah.
I'm disturbing up close, but you put me like a good 200 yards away from you.
Yeah.
I'm enjoyable.
You look great.
That's why this podcast works.
You
is
are,
because like
you
even take. Oh wait, a friend of David's has just showed up.
He's circling.
He has.
He's staring.
Okay, let me just ask. He's staring at me uncomfortably. Now I'm just going to ask you, Dave.
Yeah.
Do you see his hair as blue as well, or am I having a stroke?
Comfortable in staring at him. You just feel uncomfortable because
because I'm staring.
That's right. I just feel uncomfortable because you're staring. It's on me. Absolutely. The creepiness is me. It's in my head. That's it. No, you're fine.
And we're very happy.
How dare you judge you?
We're very happy it's there.
We're very happy. We are. It's absolutely. Listen, if you guys can send help out there.
From the past.
From the past.
If any time travelers are listening to the show, send help.
That would be fantastic. David, the person who's in front of us here, where do you know this gentleman from?
Well, through another friend, actually. We met, my friend was running a bookstore. Yes. And
Other Ian. You have a backup Ian in case I don't work out.
I have two friends. I have two friend names, Ian and David.
Yeah.
That's it. I just can't get outside of that loop. I'm not comfortable outside of names that are...
Whoever is writing your life has no creativity.
Once again, it's just me. It's just that flat state of, you know, neither up nor too low. I don't want to know any, you know, Dwaynes or any kind of Trayvons, you know, or I just can't know that sort of... Those are just too... That's
okay,
just too
those of you listening, Davis said he does not want to meet any Trayvons.
Well,
so
no, just,
if your name is Trayvon...
I don't want to. I just don't know.
No, clearly doesn't. So if your name is Trayvon, get the hell out of here. Basically, turn off the podcast right now.
I was just looking for names that are different than David and Ian.
That's true. Trayvon is a very different name than yours.
And for anybody who thinks...
No one is hearing you at all.
Sorry.
Anybody who thinks Dave is actually Dave.
Anyone thinks Dave is actually Dave. He's now actually Dave.
Because Dave's not here.
Because Dave's not here, man.
He's the other Dave.
He's the other Dave.
I'm the other Dave. That's true.
No, that all makes good sense.
Thanks for bringing that out. Thanks for dusting off that record for us.
Absolutely. Okay, well, see ya. Okay, good. All right, we got out of that. We got out of that. That was a little scary. That was weird. Yeah. I'm not going to lie to you, but that, there you go. That was a real back of the bus moment.
That was, we've had a few of those here this week. We had a fellow come up. I've got if anyone knows the episode 109 title card for the Sneaky Submarine, which I took the Yellow Submarine, like the concept of the Yellow Submarine, and I kind of mashed it together with the first action comics cover. We had a gentleman come up and ask us what it was. Mm-hmm. What is this Yellow Submarine?
Mm-hmm.
What does this mean? And then we tried to explain to him. Then we tried to explain what a podcast was, and that didn't go over very well either. That was no fun.
I'm not sure he understood what a T-shirt was.
And then I had a fellow come up to me yesterday, and he said, "Did I talk to you on Friday?" And I said, "No." He says, "Did I tell you about the script I've been working on for 12 years?" I said, "Nope, that wasn't me." So then he started to talk to me, and I said, "Are you going to ask me to draw your comic book?" He said, "Yeah, I'm not going to do it. I just want you to know right now, I'm not going to draw it. I do not have the time to draw your comic book.
No, what you got
to
do is say, I'm going to think about that for 12 years.
So he just, but he took that. That was fine. He just said, okay. He packed up his stuff and he went on down the line. That's fine. I mean, I'm glad that he took just a quick rejection. I didn't want him to get into his pitch. I feel the same way when telemarketers call. I say no at the top of it.
Well, a lot of telemarketers, they call and ask you to draw their comic book.
That's right.
Could you do it? It's a kind of an autobiographical comic about a telemarketer who's also a real hero.
Well, I feel guilty if the person does their whole 5-minute spiel and at the end of it I go, I'm not interested. What I should say is at the top, before you get into your spiel, I am not interested. Let's end it now. Ian's going to go and sell.
If you want to look at anything, feel free. You're welcome to.
Yeah, that's. It feels weird doing this show because, you know, you have your job. It's almost like if I was still working in the parking lot and we were doing it in the booth, and I had to interrupt, you know, when a car came up to deal with the car.
Well, I've come up with a series of topics that you can talk about when I have to do this.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Dave, you know the Fantastic Four?
Vaguely.
If the Beatles were the Fantastic Four, which would be which?
Oh, wow, okay. So, George would be Sue. Ringo would be the Thing. Lennon would be... I'm going to change it.
Yeah, who's the hothead?
Lennon? Yeah. Lennon is...
Johnny Storm?
No, Lennon would still... Oh, no. Okay, Paul would be the Mr. Fantastic. Lennon would be... I'm going to keep it the way it was. Lennon is Johnny Storm, yeah. But it doesn't really work, because I think of Lennon, still think of him as kind of the leader of the Beatles. So I really want to make him Mr. Fantastic. But if I did that, then... No, I'm going to change it. Lennon is Fantastic. Mr. Fantastic. Paul McCartney is Sue Storm. The Human Torch is Paul McCartney. Oh, sorry, it's George Harrison, I should say.
Okay.
And then the Thing is Ringo.
That's really? Me.
Yeah.
Because I don't see George Harrison as the hothead.
Who's the first one to quit?
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, he's not... He had his angry times. He was not a... He wasn't a bundle of bunnies. He was also had a... He had a few... He had a pickly side that people
did not
see. I like
the Easter expression, he's not a bundle of bunnies. Those of you out there, I know it's not Easter when you're listening to this, but if you want to use the expression, that guy's not a bundle of bunnies, please do. And here's the fun thing. If you use that expression to David, he will have forgotten he said it.
That's true enough.
Yeah, that is something I am enjoying with people that are writing to us on our message boards at sneakydragon.com, is they'll make a comment, and Dave will go, I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't remember.
Because Dave doesn't listen to the show.
I don't listen to the show.
There was someone commenting about urinal troughs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
and,
that's
and you were like, I don't know what you're talking about, brother. No idea.
Let's be fair.
You're talking crazy, man.
He wrote troughs. He did not write urinal troughs, so I couldn't remember. There was no clue to help me back. The thing is,
you spent most of your youth hanging out by urinal troughs, trying to meet celebrities.
That's not good. For
your zines.
No, it's not even that. I mean, I'm so lucky that I have two daughters who remember things that I say, so they can tell me hilarious jokes that I said like 3 months ago, and I'd be like, oh man, that's a great joke. I wish I could remember the jokes that I say, because I don't. I really, honestly, they just go into the atmosphere and they're gone forever. And for me, like, I do not remember them at all.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have a memory.
Yeah, it's the same thing when I do improv shows. People will say things afterwards, mm-hmm. and I'll, like, I don't remember that at all. I just flush it all away.
Yeah.
I'm doing an improv show in about 20 minutes.
Sure.
And I swear to you, I will forget everything from it.
The thing is that you... I do the show. Listen to it once. I mean, I edit the show. I listen to that one time.
You've listened to our show once.
I listen to every show once.
Oh, okay.
And I will never listen to it again. You know, and because it's me. It's not that interesting, really. You know,
yeah.
My mind is still boggled that people listen to more than one or two of the shows. So
you know what's going to be
weird? That you do.
And I hope that we never do get senile. But if we do,
yeah.
It will be weird just listening to like these past stories.
It
almost is like a journal of our rambling, you know. But it's more true than a real journal.
Yeah.
Because a real journal, when you write a journal, it's all fakey. But this kind of nonsense, this is more of what we actually were at this time.
You're probably right. Like, when you write a journal, I mean, that was something that I had. I always wanted to write a journal there's three things I tried to do as a teenager and growing up. One thing, though, is that I always feel like I've missed the boat. So when I decided I was going to write a journal when I was a teenager...
So catch the plane. Yeah, that's what I always say.
When I was a teenager, I thought, oh, it's too late. I've already, like... Everything that's exciting has happened to me. It's already happened. This is stupid. I'm not saying this is a defensible...
Yeah, no. Stand. After puberty, it's all downhill.
That's right. And so I just couldn't see the point of having a journal, but I did try. But I found that rather than it being like an honest account of me, it was me trying to be very clever and smart in the book. And it didn't feel real. And it was hard to write. I made it really hard to write because I was, my expectations.
I was too complainy. I was just too whiny about everything. And I'm like, well, that's not right either. I'm writing this at the end of the day when I'm the most bummed out.
Yeah.
Which is not the time to be writing it. Yeah.
The other thing I wish I had done was, I always wanted to do is write a journal of what I watched, like movies or read books or music I listened to, just to write like, listen to, thought it was good, or just a quick thought about it. And I've tried it a few different ways to kind of incorporate it, but it always kind of falls, the wheels fall off at some point usually for some reason. And then the third one was one time I decided it would be a good idea, because do you know the writer Robert Benchley? He was a member of the Algonquin Roundtable.
Okay, but I know the Roundtable.
He wrote for the New Yorker. He was like an essayist. He wrote humorous essays and things like that. He was a very funny fellow. He also did short films as well. And he was in like the Foreign Correspondent, the Hitchcock film with Joel McRae. He plays a journalist in that film. And but when he was younger, he would keep a careful notation of what he spent every day. He had a little notebook, and when he spent something, he'd write it down. I thought, that's a brilliant idea. I'm going to do that. I did it one day, and it was so depressing. The amount I was spending, I realized I'm actually spending more than I'm making in one day. So I just stopped because I couldn't deal with the reality of what time.
Our friend Roger, we aren't going to say his last name,
yeah.
He does that. And has every day. Everything he ever buys, he gets a receipt for, no matter how small, just to have a complete record of it.
I can't, I mean, it was just too much. Like, and it wasn't, because I had set myself a budget. I felt like, I'm going to spend $30 a week and the rest I'm going to da-da-da. And so on that day, I paid for some gas.
You bought a $50 gift certificate.
That's right. I paid for some
gas. Wait a minute.
And then I went to my friend's store, his bookstore, and he had the 7-set collection of Trollope's, the Barsetshire books, and it was $30 for these 7 books. I'm like, well, I gotta buy these books. Like, these beautiful hardcover books with introductions.
Absolutely.
My budget was, just that one day, my budget was gone, so I just took that notebook over the shoulder, goodbye.
Now, here's my question to you. As future Dave, talking to past Dave, who's in that bookstore, would you say to him, buy those books?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
That's nice.
You never regret the money that you spent.
Future Dave's nice.
You never regret the money you spent.
No, that's good. You never regret the money you spent? That's an interesting thing to be thinking.
Yeah.
Well, that's a dangerous thing to be thinking, because we're in a place right now where you could spend a lot of money. And well, you're saying future Dave would never regret this.
I would never. I mean, I could have. Yesterday I bought 4 bandes dessinées. I found 2 Natasha albums and 2 Yoko Tsuno albums. And they were $10 each. So, you know, it's $40.
Yeah. All sound like made up names. Okay.
And I could have, you know, not bought them. I could have said, well, that's a lot of money. But, you know, when am I going to see them again? Probably never. And so,
or at least it'll be a year.
Or it'll be another year, and then have them in the same boxes, because no one's going to buy French comics. And yeah, so I bought them, and I'm not going to regret it. You know, another year, I mean, maybe in 2 weeks I might regret it when I need $40 to buy some groceries. I might regret it. But in a year or in 2 years, when I'm looking at those books on my shelf, I won't regret the fact that they're there.
Now you've got like 2 dogs you can send out to hunt for game.
Yeah, there you go.
Bring back a fresh rabbit for Papa.
Al is not a hunting dog. He is the biggest baby I've ever seen.
Aw.
I cannot believe what
people have been asking about Al, by the way. People have been like coming up to our table. Yeah, they were asking about Al.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He's what I like to call a permanent guest. I don't think that I think that everyone else in the family has fallen madly in love with Al.
I'm
madly indifferent to Al. But I'm madly indifferent to all our animals.
I think madly indifferent is a great way to be.
They all get treated very well by me. I'm not mean to them. I love to pet them and play with them and call, you know, I have my pet names for them. But
okay, Dave, I'm gonna say something to you that's gonna kill a little time.
Okay.
The Beatles, if they had to be breeds of dog, what would they be? Go.
Okay, Ringo would be like a
hey bulldog?
No, one of those sad dogs, like a basset hound. They don't have that kind of mournful face. John Lennon would be like a collie. Paul McCartney would be something like a one of those dogs with the kind of the big round faces that like a Pekingese, or a chow.
Chow.
Yeah, and then George would be a like an Alsatian or like a pointer, like a dog with a kind of a sharper face. Okay, I've answered your question.
2 for 5.
There we go. I think about these things. This is an old question for me.
Oh, is that right?
No, not really.
Okay.
I'm just joking.
All right, here's a tough one for you.
Okay.
If the Beatles, we're not going to ever talk about this on our Beatles podcast,
yeah,
but
that's right.
If the Beatles could be provinces or territories of Canada,
yes.
Which would
they be? Oh, my gosh. So, John would. Paul would be Ontario.
I would say George would be Saskatchewan.
Okay, I'll give you George Saskatchewan. John would be.
But feel free to look inside.
Gee, that's a tricky one. I feel like John would be... Paul would be Ontario. John would be... let's give him BC. George would be...
Okay.
Oh, man, okay. That's hard.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
George would be PEI. There we go. I've solved it. Just like that. Ian's still selling stuff. That's something I never thought about before. That's hard because then you have to characterize each province, which is hard to do. I don't know if we really characterize provinces. It'd be like saying if there were a state.
BC's, I mean, Vancouver's the most relaxed and the most temperate.
Yeah, BC. And I was thinking more kind of late, easygoing, and kind of...
Who's Quebec? That'd be John. John's Quebec. I'd
John say. Is Quebec, you think so?
Yeah,
is Quebec
a little party town? Cultured and temperamental? Well, hot-blooded?
Maybe so.
I don't trying to separate, yeah.
That's right. So it's George then. George is the first one to leave.
That's a good point.
And Paul was the first one to say, I'm leaving. It's so hard to know. Like, because it's hard to give, like, absolute hard characters to every...
Oh, this province. Is a very loosey-goosey conversation.
Yeah.
Don't worry about
yeah.
being absolute.
Okay.
We're not going to hold you to any of this.
Because I think of Ontario as kind of like a business... It's sort of the business province. You know what I mean? Like, it's the hard-headed...
This one's got 3D glasses in the middle.
You know,
I'll tell you that one.
It has a creative element. It's kind of the center of our entertainment industry in Canada, Toronto. But at the same time, it's very business-oriented. And so I feel like that's Paul.
Totally Paul.
That's totally Paul. And so why would you give... Who did you give Saskatchewan to? Or
I gave it to George because kind of the keystone...
Okay.
He's just like, he's there,
yeah,
it's
the quiet,
there, it holds
yeah,
everything together.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Couldn't have it without it.
Couldn't have it without it, that's true.
But what do you think Ringo is?
Ringo?
Like Maritimes, I'd say Ringo. He might be like a Newfoundland. He's a little bit crazy. He's fun.
Newfoundland.
He's lovable.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'll give him Newfoundland. Yeah. Yeah. One of those kind of places, a smaller one. Like I said, PEI for George, because I always think of him as like a like an island to himself, you know. But I like Saskatchewan better, actually.
Yeah.
In terms of nonsensical comparisons, that works for me.
Okay, and I think I'm back. I know, it's all, it's just a, this is kind of fun, actually, giving you these things to do.
What time do you have to go to?
I have to leave here at 3 o'clock, and that's about 10 minutes from
okay,
now.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. So those of you listening at home, that's 10 more minutes of babbling. We just had a Sleeping Beauty go by, which is fantastic because it's all been frozen now. And I think the classic princesses have been getting short shrift.
Well, Cinderella was here yesterday.
Snow White.
Yeah, we had Cinderella and her stepsisters were here yesterday.
Oh, good for the stepsisters. Yeah, they normally don't get out.
I know, and I thought that's really taking the hit for the team, like being an ugly stepsister with the beautiful Cinderella.
Well, let me tell you something
about... right now, they weren't that beautiful.
I'm going to tell you something about Cinderella right now.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like they had a bad deal, right?
Yes.
Like, things worked out badly for them. But aren't they now in the royal family?
No.
They're not?
No.
Wait, but Cinderella is now the queen.
Yeah.
So what does that make your stepsisters?
Step-princesses.
Step-princesses.
Yeah.
You're a step-princess. That's still pretty good.
Yeah. They don't get to live in the castle.
You don't have to live in the castle. You're still a member of the royal family. People are still going to be like treating you really good, right?
I don't think you remember. I don't think you can marry into the royal family if you're a step.
Oh, I think no. I think you're incorrect about that.
I think you're a step below.
So her mother, her stepmother.
Yeah.
Nothing. No dice.
Nothing
just
at all.
Just like
definitely
cuts
nothing at all.
Ties.
No, you
completely.
Have. You have.
This isn't a Snow White. The mom dies.
Yeah, no. It's not. Doesn't work that way.
Okay.
It's not something that, yeah, it's not something you can marry, like, you can't, like Prince Philip. He can only be a prince. He can never be a king.
Right, because he was originally a frog, right? That was his story?
Right. Even though he married Queen
Elizabeth. And he was
Queen
thrown
Elizabeth,
against the wall very hard.
Marrying Queen Elizabeth did not make him a king and did not make the rest of his family royalty.
How does that story work? Where, like, wasn't that the thing in The Frog Prince?
Yeah.
Where she finally got so sick of him that she just, like, grabbed him and hucked him against the wall as hard as she could, and then he became a prince and went, I love you, and that was the thing. It wasn't
Wait.
A kiss.
Is
like
this
two
the
ones.
Actual? Okay.
This yeah, is this is the actual fairy tale. Okay. This isn't the Disney. Mwah, oh, everything worked out fantastic.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
First of all, it's creepy if you got a lady who's kissing frogs.
That's weird.
It is very weird. Oh,
sorry.
Dave's just seen some people walking by.
Yeah,
that are interesting.
Wearing fur. Yeah. This has caught my eye.
I got to go do something for a second.
Sure. Not all of them, but you don't have a Beatles question for me? Oh, darn.
Oh yeah, yeah. James Lloyd is doing that over there. Yeah.
There's no way. Yeah.
Yeah, I do the
Phyllis
right.
Is here
I write
She's telling me that I should, just, I should just.
And I've written
it.
A story in the Frink, Professor Frink story.
I don't think Ian realizes how
yes.
on mic he is, so that's okay. He took off his headphones, so he doesn't realize. He's doing a very good job, everybody.
Absolutely.
He's actually
I'll
sold
do a
quite a few comics
you
this weekend. I'm pretty proud of him.
My pleasure.
It's nice that everyone's coming down. And it's nice that kids have something here that they can come and look at. You know, there's so many comics here that involve people getting raped in the face that it's nice that there is Futurama or Simpsons comics. And Ian's
neither can
here.
I.
And another friend of ours, James Lloyd, who draws, does the actual art for Futurama comics, is here. And so it's something for, you know, obviously older kids or adults who are like kids, but
there
also
you go.
Young kids
That's,
can come.
That's $3. I'll give you some change. You're very welcome.
Oh, 20. What a world.
And if I can't get you some change, we'll do the honor system.
I've
you can
got
just
some change.
It to me when you can get it to me. Do you have a five on you, sweetie?
Yeah, in my red purse right there.
Okay.
Ian?
Yes, David? Oh, here. David is supplying me with a $5 bill. Can I also borrow that two off you and I will give you.
I'll give you. Here's 20.
Well, no, I'm just going to dig this and I'll do this. This all works out. There. Thank you very much.
Right. But if you take these 50 and give me the 20, then you
okay.
And you just
oh, Dave's doing the old scam.
That's right. Now I'm going to give you
20 shifty.
I'm going to give you these two tens.
That's
with the
right.
20.
For this, I need to give you this
50.
Dirty old 10 for that crisp new hello. I would love to. Thank you very much.
Things have taken a turn here. I'm sure people are enjoying hearing us giving change on Sneaky Dragon. I have a real
Dave,
editing job ahead of me.
If the Beatles could be holidays, what holidays would they be?
What holidays would they be?
Who would be Easter?
Oh, goodness, that is too hard to figure out. Let me see, what days do we have to choose from here? Easter? Christmas?
Well, there's Christmas.
Valentine's Day, would that be one? Or
I'd say Ringo's Halloween.
Ringo's Halloween, okay. Not John?
Oh, do you think of John's Halloween?
I think of John more as a Halloween guy. I think John would like that more.
There you go.
I'm going to give Valentine's Day to Paul. I'm going to give Arbor Day to Ringo.
We're getting comments right now. You might mention who's with us right now. We're being joined by...
I think I did mention that Phyllis was here with us, but I may have not. So that leaves us with George. George gets... I'm going to give George Christmas. No, I'm going to give George Easter. I'm going to give George Easter.
Oh, you're giving George Easter?
Yeah, my sweet lord. Come on, my sweet lord. Right? What was that story? Who's John?
Go. Thank you
John's
so much.
Halloween.
Thanks for coming by.
I have different conversations going on here in the show.
Folks, this is what it sounds like in our head as we go crazy. I know.
That's good. You sold some comics. Oh, that's good.
No, everything's fine. The show's paid for another week.
That's right. We can keep it going. One more week that I don't have to try and figure out how to put a donate button on the website. I tried to put one on and it shut the website down. So.
Yeah, Dave put one on and it said donut, unfortunately.
Donut, yeah.
And actually ordered a large amount of donuts, which was sad because you couldn't eat sugar during that time.
That's true. Well, actually, what it was people kept coming to my house and doing donuts with their cars in front of our house. It's the whole... The whole crescent, the whole cul-de-sac was full of all these tire marks. It was terrible.
Exactly. It was awful.
I don't know. I was thinking of donut.
So I've got about 2 more minutes.
Okay.
Before I have to dash. Let me just say to our listeners out there, thank you for your patience on these crazy episodes. This is definitely, we're nothing if not an experimental show.
That's right.
And so we thought, let's see if we can actually set up at the booth that we're at.
Yeah.
And we've done it. We have tried it. You can tell us if it was a failure or a success.
Sure, yeah, you can tell.
It's completely up to you. The one really nice thing, because we're not going to be doing another one of these from here, has been meeting all the people that have said they like the show.
Yeah, that's awesome.
With the obvious, example of Mary Hook, who is right here.
Hi, Mary
Hook. Who is actually here. Could you just say hi really quickly?
Hi, really quickly.
Yay! We were literally just talking about you. And the devil himself,
yes.
You appeared. But a lovely devil.
That's right.
But Mary Hook has come here from Chicago to say hello. David is offering her candy.
Yes.
She is refusing it.
She's ignoring me.
Because Canadian candy is disturbing to Americans. But we've had other people come and
You're
say
smart,
hi. And it's been very touching and it's been very sweet. And we really do appreciate it. That's the only sweetness Dave has been allowed for the last couple of days.
That's
and
true.
So he's been absorbing it.
That's true.
If you want to say hi, the other way to do so is, of course, the Sneaky Dragon website, sneakydragon.com. We love seeing your message boards. Mary is now walking away. We're going to see her tomorrow at a comedy show that's hosted by former guest of the show and always friend of the show, Ben Mills.
Yes.
We might as well plug his show. If you're in Vancouver, every Monday at the Prop House in Vancouver, he does an amazing comedy show.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's intimate, it's fun, it's funny. I do it a little bit, and it's a good time. And if in any way you could travel back in time, you could see the show tomorrow with me and David and Mary and her friend Tracy.
Yeah.
But you probably do not possess that time travel ability. And if you do, please just use it for good.
That's right.
Yeah, don't go see... Well, you know what? Maybe do go see comedy shows. Maybe that is a good... way of doing
that's
things.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't say no to that.
I haven't hurt anyone.
Anyway, we don't know if this worked or not, but we do appreciate you listening all the way to the end if you have. And we'd like to thank everyone who has come and said hi. It does mean a lot to us, Nina and all, everyone else.
Yes.
And is there anything else you want to say, Dave?
No, I just want to say thanks for having me at your table this year, because I'm on your dime, so I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
But I got to come down and share half a table with you, so thank you very much.
My pleasure. David is back on sugar.
Yes.
So if you see him, feel free to give him a Big Turk chocolate bar. He is the only person in the world who actually enjoys them.
Nope. Other friend of the show, David Fine, loves his Turkish delight.
Okay, only people named David.
That's true. That is
the rule.
That is right. You have discovered, discovered the secret.
Live to tape from Fan Expo. We've been Sneaky Dragon. I've been Ian Boothby.
And I've been David Dedrick.
And Phyllis is off to the side, but
Phyllis
she can't say
too.
Nothing.
Want to say hi?
No, nope, she does
no.
not
she
want to say hi. You know your daughters do not want to be on the show.
She just wants to say hi to Tom Fenton.
Okay, good.
It's the only person.
Thanks for listening.
All right, bye.